Chris Hewat, City Manager.
Elizabeth Hall, City Attorney.
All right, welcome, everyone. Thank you. We'll then move on to report out from closed session. Legal Counsel Elizabeth Hall, can you tell us what happened there?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. The council went into closed session on three items. The first was public employee performance evaluation regarding the city manager. There's no reportable action. The second two items are two pieces of litigation filed against the city by John Borst, and there is no reportable action.
Okay, thank you. Next, we have a series of proclamations, and if I can have Sergeant Josh Hermanson come up with me first on the first one. Yeah, or all of them, too. Yeah, I'd love to see everybody. If all you guys would like to come on up, came here for a reason, right? Feel very safe tonight. Okay, this is a proclamation, National Police Week and Police Officer Memorial Day, May 11th through 16th, 2026. Whereas President John F. Kennedy signed Public Law 87-726, October 1st, 1962, which designated May 15th as Peace Officer Memorial Day, and the week of that week was also the date that it falls was the police week. Whereas all peace officers play an essential role in safeguarding the rights and freedom of citizens of the city. And whereas members of law enforcement recognize their duty to serve the people of Paso Robles by safeguarding life, property, and protection against violence, disorder, and by protecting the innocent against deception, the weak, against oppression and intimidation. And whereas during National Police Week and throughout the year, the city of Paso Robles recognizes and appreciates the critical contributions and sacrifices of members of law enforcement at all levels. And whereas Police Week recognizes and honors those who have passed away in the line of duty and recognizes current peace officers in law enforcement. And whereas May 15th is designated as Peace Officer Memorial Day in honor of the fallen and their families, and U.S. flags shall be flown at half staff. Therefore, let it be resolved that I, John Hammond, by virtue of authority vested me and as mayor, and speaking on behalf of the entire City Council, do hereby proclaim May 11th through 16th, 2026 as National Police Week, and May 15th, 2026 as Peace Officer Memorial Day, and publicly salute at the service of all law enforcement officers in our community and in the communities across the nation. Thank you very much for your service.
On behalf of the Paso Robles Police Department, we'd like to thank the council for doing this proclamation. Obviously, this is a pretty important week for us. This is a week of remembrance of our brothers and sisters that have kind of given the ultimate sacrifice for their communities. So once again, we'd like to thank the council, we'd like to thank the community for always supporting us. It's a wonderful place to work. We feel supported, and these guys go to work every night and every day to take care of this community, and we're proud to do it. So thank you again.
Thank you, Sergeant. And next, if I can have Victoria Teeter come forward, Victoria. And all the water safety folks. Victoria, can you hold that one? This is a proclamation recognizing May as Water Safety Month, where it is important for families and individuals of all ages to understand the importance of water safety guidelines And whereas drowning is the leading cause of unintentional injury-related deaths from children 1 to 4, and the second leading cause of children from 5 to 17. And whereas education in water safety helps prevent drowning and water-related injuries. And whereas water safety awareness and basic swimming skills are crucial to anticipating, avoiding, and surviving common drowning situations. Whereas the American Red Cross and communities across the nation are promoting Water Safety Month of May, we also are recognizing our staff for that service that you guys provide our citizens. Now, therefore, let it be resolved that I, John Hammond, virtue of the authority vested in me as mayor and speaking on behalf of the entire city council, do hereby proclaim May 2026 as Water Safety Month. Congratulations and thank you.
I just want to say thank you to Mayor Hammond and the entire city council for recognizing Water Safety Month with this proclamation. We're really excited to get back out there this summer and offer aquatics programs to the whole community. Any age is welcome. We have private lessons, and we're just so excited to anybody that needs water safety education, swim lessons. There's lap swim if you're already proficient, a host of activities. So just come see us and get in the pool. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And if I could have Stacy Jacob and Tracy Dotterman come on up. Thank you. And everyone else. Matt? Yeah. Would one of you guys like to hold this one? Great. Welcome. This is a proclamation, National Travel and Tourism Week, May 3rd through the 9th, 2026, and California Tourism Month, May 2026. Whereas travel is an economic powerhouse of every state in the nation and the country, generating $2.9 trillion in economic output in 2025 and supporting 15 million American jobs. And whereas the tourism industry remains a foundational force, ranking California as the leader in the United States, supporting 1.17 million jobs and 159 billion dollars in revenue in 2025, a pillar of the world's fourth largest economic generator, California. Whereas in 2025, Paso Robles welcomed approximately 1.3 million visitors who collectively spent $470 million across the regional economic, generating a total economic impact of $665 million and sustaining approximately 4,700 jobs, hospitality, recreational, and food and beverage service and retail jobs in this area. And whereas visitor activity in 2025 generated $44 million in state and local tax revenues, including $9.3 million in transient occupancy tax, $16 million in sales tax. These visitor-collected taxes account for 37% of our Paso Robles General Fund and provide vital support for community and public services such as police, emergency services, and public works. And whereas the Paso Robles wine industry has elevated the region's cultural landscape, fostering a vibrant downtown, Michelin-recommended dining, a distillery trail, craft breweries, and celebrating attractions like Sincerio, Vina Robles Amphitheater, and Tin City District, enriching the visitor experience and community life. And whereas at the annual Hospitality and Tourism Awards this May 7th, 2026, Travel Paso and the tourism community will recognize the region's extraordinary individuals whose hospitality and leadership have impacted Paso Robles as a tourism destination. And whereas four distinguished leaders will be honored for their leadership, teamwork, exemplary service, and dedication. The late Norma Moy, Kathy Benelli, David Walker, and Adam Firestone. Now therefore let it be resolved that I, John Hammond, by virtue of the authority vested me as mayor, and speaking on behalf of the entire City Council, do hereby proclaim May 2026 as California Tourism Month and May 3rd through 9th, 2026 as National Travel and Tourism Week in Paso Robles, and recognizes the individuals and honoring the contributions that they have done to our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor, and members of City Council. On behalf of Travel Paso and our entire tourism community, it's an honor to accept this proclamation recognizing National Travel and Tourism Week and California Tourism Month. This recognition matters. It matters because tourism in Paso Robles is not an abstract industry. It is a hotelier who greets a guest on a Friday night. It is a tasting room host pouring a flight on a Saturday afternoon. It is the line cook, the housekeeper, the shuttle driver, the festival volunteer, and the small business owner downtown who keep this region running and welcoming. In 2025, those efforts added up to 1.3 million visitors, 469 million in direct visitor spending, 665 million in total economic impact across our region, and 4,700 jobs supported. Behind every one of those numbers is a person who's chose Paso Robles and a Paso Robles professional who made their visit memorable.
Thank you, Julia, and thank you, members of council. I want to add that tourism is how we take care of one another. Beacon Economics released findings that quantify those visitor dollars here in Paso Robles, thanks to the study you did about a year ago. Tourism generates 37% of the city's general fund. Without that revenue, every household in this city would need to pay an additional $1,779 to maintain the services and infrastructure we all rely on. Visitor contributions help fund our police officers, our fire and emergency service personnel, our public works crews, the streets we drive on, the parks our families enjoy, the downtown that draws people from around the world and this lovely community we get to call home. That is what travel and tourism do in Paso Robles. They strengthen the community for the people who live here while welcoming the people who come to experience what makes this place extraordinary.
To our partners across the region, our wineries, hotels, restaurants, attractions, and small businesses, thank you for the work you do every day. To Mayor and Council, thank you for your continued support of the destination and for recognizing the role this industry plays in our shared prosperity.
Thank you. Thank you, Julia. Okay, moving on, we have capital projects report. Didis, do you have that for us?
Yes, good evening, Mayor, members of the City Council, and members of the audience at tonight's meeting. This is my monthly status report of all our projects in the City of Paso Robles. So the first batch of projects I will be reporting on are the projects that are in progress. Here's the list of them, and I will be presenting some photos of each of them and giving an update. The first one is the pickleball courts at our Sherwood Park renovation area. You can see that it looks like a pickleball court. We've finished the painting and the court lines, and the individual fences between the courts are installed, and we're about ready for play. We still have a few things to cover. We're still waiting for PG&E to give us power so we can turn on the lights, a few more testing of our irrigation system. And also, however, we still have construction going on Scott Street, and so we don't really want to open too soon until that construction is completed so that it does not interfere with traffic and pedestrians. The other project that's in construction is the Capitol Hill Sewer Project. Capitol Hill is on the list to be repaired using sales tax funds, But however, before we can do that, we have to fix the very, very, very old sewers underneath the road. And so these are, we're still in progress in doing the sewer. And then once that's done, then we will do the road repairs. So I'm pleased to announce that Measure I-24 funded the road repairs in the Sierra Bonita Village. And as you can see, we're at the end. We've done all the pavement striping, so we're pretty much done. We still have a few streets that will need slurry seals. Also, Scott Street will need to have a slurry seal, and Fallbrook Court will also need a slurry seal. We're just waiting for the sewer on Scott Street to be completed, and then we will come right behind them and do the slurry seal, and then it will be completed. But a majority of the Sierra Bonita roads are completed. The only thing left to do are the little cul-de-sacs off Scott Street and the Turtle Creek Road and the streets off Turtle Creek Road. Those are slurry seal streets. The West Side Fiberized Slurry Seal Project is also complete. I show here the list of the streets, and so I show the final task, which is the pavement striping, and that project is totally complete. So now what are we going to do? So we have some upcoming projects coming up, and here I go. Here's a list of them that are in design. The downtown streets are in design. The Orchard Bungalow is in design. And then Creston Road, Commerce Way, and Riverside are soon going to be in construction, and I will report on those right now. First, the Creston Road project. You will see in your agenda for tonight a recommendation to award the contract to Whitaker, who is the apparent low bidder for the project. There were three bidders on the project, and Whitaker gave us the best and the most responsive and responsible proposal. And I'd like to say that their bid came way below the engineer's estimate. The engineer's estimate was about $15 million, and their bid is like right around $13 million. So we've already saved money from the start. I just want to remind everybody, however, that this construction will be quite challenging. The rolling hills will be closed at Creston 24/7 during construction due to the numerous storm drain lines and water pipelines that we will need to complete underneath the runabout. So that will allow us to do that work and not impede that way. That's why that rolling hills will need to be closed. However, we structured the bid documents so that the roundabout work and then the work, the road repair from about Melody to Niblick will start simultaneously, and then the road part from Melody to Niblick should be completed in about 8 to 10 months, and then the roundabout will continue on for another 18 to 24 months. The next project is the Commerce Way project. We have a bid opening on May 14th, and once we have an approved, a good bid, we will be taking it to you for approval. The other project that is on your agenda is the Riverside Curb Ramps and Sidewalk Infill Project. Again, Riverside is on the list to do road repair from 17th to 21st. But before we can do that, we need to upgrade the curb ramps and the sidewalks, and so that we don't have to use sales tax for the curb ramps and the sidewalks. We're utilizing a CDBG, Community Development Block Grant, to do those projects, so that way the road tax will just be going onto the surface of the streets. That concludes my presentation, and I'll be happy to answer any of your questions.
All right. Thank you, Didis. Questions, Didis? Mm-hmm. Right? No? Okay. Thank you very much for this.
Thank you.
Next, we have Adventist Health Community Healthcare Update, Ryan Ashlock.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to be here with you. I'm Ryan Ashlock. I'm the president for Adventist Health here on the Central Coast. Want to share with you a couple updates about what's going on. I'd, across our organization. We've now been in the community for about 2 years, and given this is our first opportunity to get in front of this group, just want to provide a high-level overview of our organization and where we're focused. And so, again, thank you for the opportunity. So let's start with who we are as an organization. Avernus Health has been around for a long time. We're a 27 hospital system. We span 3 states, primarily in California. The bulk of our hospitals are here in California. 23 of our 27 are here. We have 3 in Oregon and then 1 in Hawaii. We are a faith-based, not-for-profit health system. And that's something that I like to be able to highlight to groups like this, because being a nonprofit, which we certainly all understand what that means, but every dollar that we generate is reinvested back into this community. And we're so blessed and honored to be able to be the primary healthcare provider up here in North County with Twin Cities, and then also the hospital at Sierra Vista and SLO. But to be able to invest back into our community and really our shareholders, our community and our people, and really are proud to be able to invest back into our community and provide access to high quality healthcare. And certainly we know in a community like this, access to healthcare is challenging, and we'll talk a bit about what we're doing to help solve that. As an organization, we're really focused in 5 different areas: people, access, facilities, technology, and our community. I'm going to start with talking about people first. Something that we say a lot in healthcare is that patients are at the center of everything that we do. And while that's absolutely true, who is the ones that are caring for those patients? It's our people. And so as an organization, our investments start with the people that work within our organization. It's extremely important that we are investing into them to create an environment where they can thrive, because the more engaged our people are, the more invested our people are, the better care that is provided to our community, to our patients, and the better experience that our patients and community has with us. So we've done a lot to be able to invest into our people over the 2 years that we have been here, into bringing competitive wages, improving the spaces in which they work in each and every day, and are proud to be able to continue to invest in our people as we move forward. Next, I want to talk about access. I know certainly a topic that is of much discussion in a community like ours. I was blessed to be in our Hawaii network prior to relocating here to the Central Coast about 18 months ago. And one of the things that I was most surprised by was what a healthcare desert it is here on the Central Coast. Believe it or not, 2,500 miles in the middle of the ocean, we had a better time recruiting and retaining physicians there in Hawaii than we do here on the Central Coast. And so we as an organization are very much focused on how do we bring more physicians into this community. The last physicians need assessment was done by about 3 years ago, and the shortage in our county was 100 primary care providers. That's a staggering number. And Adventist Health certainly is not going to be the ones that's going to bring 100 primary care providers to this community, but we are working extremely hard to be able to identify and recruit more providers and physicians here. I think it's especially needed up here in the North County. There's more gaps in access to healthcare here than there is in other parts of the county. We have engaged with a national physician recruitment firm that really specializes in communities like ours to help us tap into their Rolodex, if you will, to give more awareness to our community and the opportunities that exist here. And we have started to see some benefits of that work, of more providers coming into our community. But that's going to be an ongoing focus of ours as we move forward. Facilities is another important investment that we are making, and I want to talk about both our investments that we're doing here in North County and also a recent announcement that we made in terms of our investment that we're doing at Sierra Vista. As we think about North County healthcare and Twin Cities, again, recruiting primary and specialty care providers has to be a key focus, and it is. We're also focused on strengthening our inpatient, emergency, and imaging services. Being that we're the only hospital here in the North County, we're also the busiest emergency department across the county, so it's extremely important that we have availability of services 24/7, 365. We're also working on upgrading technology across our organization. I'll talk about that here more in a bit, and then some operational systems that improve the access and reliability of our organization and make for a better patient experience. And then making targeted investments into our physical plant. We're actually quite blessed that the physical plant at Twin Cities is a really good one. When you compare that to our other hospital of Sierra Vista, Twin Cities is in much better shape. And the tower that was built is about 20 to 25 years old. And believe it or not, in healthcare, having a tower that's that age is actually relatively new. So we are very much pleased with the status of our physical plant of our hospital up here in the North County. Do want to talk a bit about, real quickly, about our investment that we're putting down at Sierra Vista. And you may ask, well, why are we talking about a San Luis Obispo investment in Paso? But really, an investment in Sierra Vista is an investment into our broader county, being that it is the region's only trauma center, the only neonatal intensive care unit. We're doing all the high-risk deliveries down there. Investing into that physical plant, into that hospital, is something that our entire county is going to benefit by. And so over the next several years, we will be investing over $220 million into Sierra Vista, bringing a new emergency department, new labor and delivery and postpartum units, new operating and procedure rooms, a new intensive care unit, and then we're also privatizing some of our inpatient rooms. I didn't mention on the last slide, there's also significant expansion that we're doing up here in the North County. I'm going to tease this a little bit just because it's not completely vetted yet to where we're ready to talk publicly about that, but we are very much looking to bring some more services that do not exist today into this community, one of which that I should highlight is our empath unit that we are opening at Twin Cities later on this year, or potentially early in 2027. It will be the county's only empath unit. What is an empath unit? For individuals that are suffering from a behavioral health or mental health crisis, currently they come through our emergency departments, they stay in our emergency departments until they can be transferred to the appropriate inpatient facility. That is not the right environment for healing for individuals suffering in that type of crisis. So an empath unit is a dedicated unit for those that are having that condition, and there's trained psychiatric professionals that are in that unit. They're intended to be there for up to 23 hours while we work to be able to transfer them to the appropriate setting. And so we see that unit as being something that'll be highly beneficial for Twin Cities, but beneficial across the county, given that the only other unit like that exists down at Marion in Santa Barbara County. Technology, this is one that I'm really excited to be able to share with you, is the investment that we're making into our new electronic medical record system. And so on August 30th, we'll be investing into Epic. It is the nation's leading electronic medical record. Many health systems are already on Epic, and if they're not, they are transitioning to that health system or to that electronic medical record. Why is that relevant to you all and to our community? For a couple reasons. One, it's going to really transform the way that patients can interact with our system. There's an app that is used on Epic that will allow patients to be able to schedule appointments, review the results of their lab tests, their imaging And there's a variety of other benefits that'll come from the comfort of your own home to be able to just use an app to be able to engage with us as an organization. In addition, as we talk about the challenges that exist from a primary care and specialty recruitment perspective, something that we'll be deploying in our outpatient clinics is called ambient listening. So think about your experience today when you go see a physician or a provider. They're usually sitting on the computer and they're typing as they're talking to you, right? It's not as a personal and engaging experience. With the technology and the AI that Epic has deployed, now we'll be using an iPhone or an iPad. They will push a button. It'll come in, it'll sit there, it'll listen to the conversation. It's smart enough to be able to exclude things like, hey, how's your day? How was your vacation? Things of that nature. And then all the provider will have to do is review that script, and they're gonna be able to push done, and all their charting is completed for them. Today, our providers are spending anywhere from an hour to 2 hours every evening having to catch up on charting. This will completely eliminate that. So when you think about the burnout that exists for our providers today about the charting and the other things that they come with having to care for our patients, we want to make sure we're creating an environment where they can focus on the patient and not have to focus on some of the administrative burden that comes with caring for our community. So I look forward to that coming and the benefits that will be. And then just investing in our community. I'll wrap up my comments here in just a minute. As I talked about earlier, investing in our community is one of the more exciting things that we get to be able to do. We are invested in this community's health and well-being. As being one of the healthcare providers across our county, that is really important to us, is ensuring that we're investing in other nonprofits, into our chambers of commerce, into our broader cities, because our community's success is our success, and our success is our community's success. And so that something is very much differentiates us between prior ownership in terms of our investment of keeping our community healthy and well, and the investments staying here locally. To help with that, we also have started the Avanos Health Central Coast Foundation. So this is the philanthropic arm of our organization. As we all read in the news these days, the healthcare environment is challenged from a financial perspective. And so what we do earn really goes back to be able to support the day-to-day operations. And so as we look to transform the way that we're providing care in our community, our foundation is a great extension of our organization to help raise money for that transformational work that we are doing. So at the end of the day, we want to be a trusted partner for you all, for our community, and are just, again, really blessed to be able to serve our community and provide high quality healthcare. So thank you for the opportunity to share just very briefly about some of the work that we're doing across Avanos Health.
All right, thank you, Ryan. Questions of Ryan? Chris Beal.
Great, thank you. Thank you for coming and visiting us and filling us in on your organization. You said something interesting about sort of the challenge with recruitment of physicians. And I hear around the community that, you know, it's affordability, the cost of living, different reimbursement rates for this county. How do you explain a difference in recruitment in North County than San Luis Obispo? Because I would think that in general, North County would be a bit more affordable than San Luis Obispo. Our reimbursement rates would be comparable. So what do you think is going on there?
Yeah, I would say that current state, the issues that exist in SLO are the same issues that exist up here. So I don't think the reimbursement is not different. I would just say in current state, there's more of a gap in terms of healthcare access here than exists in SLO. So I don't think there's a difference per se of recruiting a physician to SLO versus North County. Just as we look at overall county, the challenges are the same: high cost of living, cost of housing, trailing spouse, jobs, all the things that we're all collectively working on to be able to address. On the reimbursement component, We are not designated as rural in our county. We are designated as urban. And the cost of living for us actually has exponentially increased in our county over the last several years at a pretty high rate. When you compare that to our neighboring counties of Santa Barbara and Monterey, they have been on the higher cost of living for quite some time, and so their reimbursement has reflected that. The way the Medicare formula works, it takes a while for that to catch up. So we will get there at some point, but because of the fact that things have escalated relatively quickly, that formula has not caught up. That takes several years for that to be able to happen.
Very helpful. And so am I understanding you that maybe this gap that we have in terms of what the needs are and what the providers are might be more of an issue of the need in the community
Correct.
For healthcare rather yep. than yep. there being really a difference in the
practice? Yeah, and you know, one of the things that we hear a lot too is a physician that's new to this community or considering to come into this community, they will look at the gaps and they will immediately go, I'm afraid I'm gonna get burnt out because there's so many patients that I have to care for. So what I try to be able to tell them is, actually, it's great for you because you're gonna be busy immediately from day one, because in some communities, that's a challenge. Is there enough business for me to be able to build a practice? Well, there's absolutely enough business in a community like ours to be able to build a practice.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Councilman Bausch.
Just a quick, thank you, great presentation. Hit a lot of great points. Point of clarification. You said that we are designated as urban and not as rural?
Correct. And for Medicare purposes.
For Medicare,
yes.
Correct.
Yep.
And how long has that been? Is that relatively new? We've always been told that we've been rural, and that's a big challenge for
right.
reimbursement and recruitment.
Right. That's why I brought it up, because I've heard that since I've
sure.
been in the community of this rural designation. There may be other rural designations that our county may have, but from a Medicare reimbursement purposes, we are classified as urban and have been, as far as I know, for quite some time. You have to be relatively small to be classified as rural. Even we have quite a presence in the Central Valley.
Yeah.
And even our hospitals over there are still technically designated as urban. But because they are a medically underserved area, they qualify for rural health clinics, which gives enhanced reimbursement. That is not something that we qualify here in San Luis Obispo County.
And then in terms of, thank you for that clarification, in terms of catching up, is there anything that we can do to accelerate that?
Yeah, it's a very challenging, it's a zero-sum game, if you will, right? Because it's a fixed system. So it means that for our reimbursement to go up, somebody else across the country is going to have to go down. And as you might imagine, that's going to be a pretty challenging scenario to be able to go to another state and say, hey, you're going to get reduced reimbursement so we can spend some more money in California. So while that's something that we hope for, the likelihood of actually getting some progress on that is relatively slim, and that's where we've got to look at some other creative ways to be able to enhance reimbursement outside of the government-based payer system.
And anything that we can do collectively throughout the county, would love to hear from you if you put something together.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I think a lot of it is just talking in places like this about the challenges that exist, and having more of our community be aware of the fact that advocacy is really, really important, because we know what are some core tenets of a community: strong education and strong healthcare, right? And so the more that we can talk about that openly in our communities, and we're gonna be doing some more, especially with the HR1 that's coming down here and the cuts that are coming to our Medicaid or Medi-Cal system. We're starting to be more vocal as healthcare providers to our broader communities to bring more awareness of the challenges that exist, so more can start advocating for changes in the way healthcare is being reimbursed, especially in counties like ours.
Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah, thank you very much. We appreciate all the good things you're doing at both hospitals. Is your enhancement of technology and efficiency going to help at least start to bridge the gap between not having enough doctors?
I think so, because I believe by bringing Epic into this community really is going to be transformational. The way in which our providers engage with that particular system should significantly reduce burnout. And between the beautiful place that we live in and then some enhanced technology and operating effectiveness, I do believe that that's going to allow us to be more successful in our recruitment, because these are not tools that everybody has. We are deploying the latest and greatest technology that Epic has available, so it really will be a differentiator for us compared to some of the other health systems that a physician may be entertaining.
And did you know the photograph of the doctor on the screen was a Bearcat?
There was a few of them up there, so.
She's a graduate of Paso High.
Oh, very good.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay, Ryan, yeah, I think Adventist is coming into town, has been a great partner since everything I've seen the last couple of years, and I know, Megan, I think your foundation's in our Rotary, and she's stepping in and helping, and I think the biggest thing that I've seen, and along with our emergency services, is the primary care providers lack of, in other words, they call our emergency services wherein they could have gone to their doctor sooner and got things taken care of. Far ahead of the point where they have to go to the hospital with it, and that's going to be a critical hill to climb, I believe, at this point, to attract good folks. And I would assume, again, people coming out of LA or San Francisco, young doctors would love to work in this area versus in the big city. But again, hopefully you're successful in attracting those primary care providers, because it's certainly a load on our emergency services to be able to help in the interim.
It is. I mean, the number of patients we see, especially here at Twin and the emergency department, they're there because they don't have a primary care provider.
Exactly.
If they were with a primary care provider, they would not need to come into the emergency department. So we want to be able to provide care in the right setting. And an emergency department is very expensive. It's not the right setting to be able to provide primary care. And so that's why we're investing very, very heavily into the expansion of primary care. It's just going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah. Councilman Strong.
Yeah, question about the Epic system.
Yeah.
Is that available to the primary care doctors?
Yes.
Okay, so they can be part of Epic.
Yeah, there's two ways. One, if you were part of the Avenus Health Medical Group, that will automatically be part of Epic. In addition, if you're an independent primary care provider and desire to deploy Epic in your office, we have something called Community Connect, and they can access Epic at a reduced price to be able to deploy that in their office. And with that comes a number of benefits as well. So
I'm thinking of that, because that way their records and yours merge.
Correct.
And there's more better care for the customer.
Yep. Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Duplication. All right, Ryan.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate for being here. Next presentation we have is the annual updates from the Paso Robles Main Street Association, the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance, and the Paso Robles Chamber of Commerce. And who would like to go first? Jeffrey, you're up.
Good evening.
Welcome.
Everyone. Mayor Hammond, Pro Tem Gregory, Councilwoman Beal, Councilman Bausch, Councilman Strong, happy Cinco de Mayo. I hope you enjoyed your tacos from Jeffrey's Wine Country Barbecue today. Today we celebrate Cinco de Mayo and the Mexican Army's victory over Napoleon's French Army at the Battle of Puebla on May 5th, 1862. And as you may know, at that time in our history, America was 1 year into our Civil War, and it has been said that had Napoleon's army defeated the Mexican army at the Battle of Puebla, it would have made it much easier for Napoleon's French army to invade America during a very difficult time in our American history. So today we celebrate our mutual camaraderie and honor California Mexican-American culture. And on a personal note, today I also celebrate 19 years of being a resident of Paso Robles and Templeton. I officially moved to Paso from Mammoth Lakes, California on Cinco de Mayo, 2007, and I consider it one of the best decisions I've ever made. So I'm glad to be here today. I want to thank you all for having me here tonight to share with you the Paso Robles Downtown Main Street Association's annual report. I would also like to thank our distinguished city manager, Mr. Chris Hewatt, and his incredible city staff, especially economic development manager, Mr. Paul Sloan, for all your efforts in helping to support the Paso Robles Main Street Association. Well, we love our community, and we know you do too. We appreciate all the time and hard work you put into helping make the city of Paso Robles one of the greatest communities in the entire country. I'd like to start off my presentation by dedicating it to the memory of Ms. Norma Moy, our most beloved executive director of Main Street for more than 30 years. Norma was truly the matriarch of Paso Robles. Her life of public service touched every corner of our community. She helped build our downtown into a thriving center for shopping, dining, entertainment, and celebrations. She was more than just a civic leader. She was the heartbeat of our downtown. She was a tireless cheerleader for small businesses, a guardian of history, and a woman whose singular goal was unwavering, to bring people together. Today I stand before you inspired by her efforts, with great appreciation for her and all of those pioneers who came before us and helped set the foundation for this wonderful city. It's a good picture. Norma's legacy and her impact on our community will continue on for generations to come, so long as we don't take it for granted. As the saying goes, the world is run by those who show up, and Norma is a prime example of someone who showed up every day for her community. Norma helped establish a nationally recognized accredited Main Street program that has stood the test of time and is the envy of small towns across the state and the country. Under her leadership, Paso Robles earned the 2004 Great American Main Street Award. She helped to establish several events that have become woven into the fabric of the community life here in Paso Robles, including the Vine Street Victorian Showcase, the Christmas Light Parade, and the Teddy Bear Tea, which we will, my Main Street Association will be renaming Norma's Teddy Bear Tea. She helped to establish the downtown tree lighting ceremony in the downtown city park, along with many other events that we at the Main Street Association will continue on in her honor, should you allow us. She was a force of nature and worked tirelessly to promote local business in the downtown district and nurtured long-standing relationships with city officials to help build a better, stronger Paso Robles. Norma fought fiercely to protect downtown Paso Robles' beauty, charm, and sense of place, and because of her leadership, it remains the incredible gathering spot that it is today. Because of the work she put in and the work we continue at the Main Street Association, Paso Robles recently earned national attention as a USA Today 2026 Top 10 Best Main Streets in America. Our organization is a cornerstone to the foundation that built this community, along with the other community organizations that continue to spread the word about Paso Robles. As you can see, we've been mentioned quite a few times in the last decade alone. This was a great honor for our community. We got a lot of support from not just members of our community, but from around the country voting for us. So to get a top 10 nod as well, one of the best downtown districts in America was quite a tribute. And as you can see, Best Wine Region has been named several times. Tip my hat to some of our colleagues in the wine industry. The mission statement of of our organization says it all. The Paso Robles Main Street Association will actively create and implement a comprehensive program that will effectively restore, promote, and enhance the economic vitality and unique historical value of our downtown while maintaining its friendly community atmosphere. We take that mission and that responsibility to heart, and we wish to continue our mission for many years to come. The four organizational pillars of the Paso Robles Main Street Association include the Design and Economic Vitality Committees, the Promotions Committee, and the Board of Directors. These pillars set forth by the National Main Street Association for more than 40 years and have established and were established here in Paso Robles in 1988, have helped build a strong and lasting economy in our community. We're dedicated to helping local businesses grow and evolve and aiding in the overall quality of life for our residents. I'd like to show you a little more about what these organizational pillars are all about. The Design Committee is focused on restoration, preservation, and beautification of our downtown. We aim to enhance the visual quality of downtown Paso Robles by establishing guidelines, aiding property and business owners with facade improvements, murals, window displays, street landscaping, and creating an overall welcoming atmosphere in our downtown. A few of the projects we are responsible for include the Downtown Bench Project, which provides beautiful new wrought iron benches with commemorative plaques available for purchase by anyone interested in having a place to memorialize their loved ones. Or support local businesses. We also have a program called Support Our Historic Downtown Brick by Brick and offer commemorative custom engraved bricks to be placed in the downtown sidewalks. These are in addition to other public art projects that the Main Street Association helps to support, including the what I like to think is now iconic Norma's Alley arch. One of the other pillars of our organization is the Economic Vitality Committee, which is made up of local business leaders and community advocate volunteers that are focused on supporting the economic growth and prosperity of our downtown business district, as well as our associate business members from around the city, county, and state. We are focused on marketing our businesses, our business community through various means, including social media marketing, print, radio, and television advertising, and good old-fashioned friendly word-of-mouth recommendations and referrals. We are excited that we will soon be working with a new local marketing agency to help us improve our website and expand our outreach to our business members and just general enthusiasts of downtown Paso. The third pillar of our organization is the Promotions Committee, created to organize and promote fun community events throughout the downtown, often centered around our downtown city park. The goal is to provide fun and enjoyable events and activities for locals and visitors alike, designed to enhance the quality of life for all of those who come to downtown. The committee is made up of local volunteers, media representatives, event production professionals, and creative business leaders who enjoy celebrating our community. We aim to brand downtown Paso Robles as the ultimate destination for shopping, dining, and enjoying precious time with family and friends. I'm proud to say that the Paso Robles Downtown Main Street Association is responsible for producing and helping to promote more than 18 different events in our community, with many more in the works in the years to come. In the words of Mayor John Hammond, Norma got projects and events, the fun things that people like to do, started in downtown Paso. That was a great quote from a video that we made with her that the chamber helped us with.